This is not theory. This is now live across many millions of people. And we're delivering care, you know, on a like at a really significant scale, which is growing year on year.
Hello and welcome to HIMSCast. I'm your host, Jonah Comstock. Almost every area of healthcare was impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic and its subsequent telehealth boom. But in mental health care, the last year saw an increase in demand for services because of the stress of the pandemic, even as quarantine affected the supply. So it has been a booming time for telemental health services, both synchronous and asynchronous. But are those services really making a dent in the country's needs? Or in, for that matter, the world's? Here to explore that question with me is Peter Hames, CEO and co-founder of Big Health, a company that makes digital therapeutics for insomnia and anxiety and boasts an extensive ongoing relationship with England's National Health Service. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Hey, pleasure to be here, John.
Before we jump into it with Peter, this episode today is brought to you by Carisoft, the trusted IT solutions provider for healthcare institutions and public sector organizations. The dedicated cybersecurity team at Carisoft provides access to industry-leading solutions and training to secure IT environments. Their certified representatives and reseller partners have a thorough understanding of cyber requirements and mandates, allowing them to accurately match their portfolio with their customers' specific needs. You can learn more at carisoft.com/cybersecurity. So, Peter, let's just start. I mean, I'm pretty sure people out there have heard of Big Health. You guys are pretty big in the telemental health and digital therapeutic spaces, particularly if they're in the UK. But just in case, tell me a little bit about the company and your mission and how you sort of ended up where you are.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, first of all, a pleasure to be here, Jonah. Thanks for having me on. Big Health, we are a digital therapeutics company focused on sleep and mental health. And what I mean by that is we're taking evidence-based non-drug therapies for those problems, such, you know, behavioral medicine, such as cognitive and behavioral techniques that are traditionally delivered by human therapists, and then fully automating them. So removing the human entirely, no coaches, no psychologists, just pure software. And as a result, it means that we can deliver those therapies as scalably and consistently as drugs. And so this is kind of the core concept behind what we do, which is, you know, can we essentially substitute the molecule for the algorithm, but be able to benefit from all of the same sort of scalability and consistency that you get that have made pharmacotherapy so effective as a and so as really the leading therapeutic technology in the world. So that's kind of what we do. You know, in terms of like, you know, our mission and how we got here, you know, all of this whole endeavor is based on my own experience of insomnia and the struggles that I had overcoming it. You know, I'm very fortunate that I studied experimental psychology at undergrad. You know, I'm not a clinician, but I do know a little bit about the science, like enough to be dangerous. And, you know, back in the UK, went to my GP, my PCP, very smugly announced my self-diagnosis of primary chronic insomnia, asked for a course of CBT, and got told where to stick it and given Ambien. Right? And, you know, I took the meds, they didn't work. And, you know, eventually out of desperation, I self-administered a program of cognitive behavioral therapy from a self-help book, and blew my mind, cured me in 6 weeks. And to cut a long story short, the author of that book, this world expert called Professor Colin Espy, then became my co-founder. And so it's really he and I together that have built the company together, bringing Colin's like 30, 40 years of clinical research, you know, clinical academic research in the space as one of the world's leaders now at Oxford University, with my own, you know, angle and perspective on it of how do we actually make this, put this into practice versus just theory. So that's what informed our mission to help millions back to good mental health. No asterisk, like no small print. That already is the North Star that guides everything we do as a business. And really what informs this whole approach, which as you sort of intimated at the top, is like these problems around mental health are the primary hallmark in my mind is the scale of these issues. Like there's the raw prevalence in the population. And so, you know, we were really inspired by that from day one of like any solution that we create needs to take inspiration more from the world of pharma than it does necessarily from the way that these therapies have been delivered to date.
Yeah. I mean, I, as I kind of alluded to at the beginning, mental health has been, or mental health conditions and sort of poor access to resources for managing them has been kind of an epidemic for a long time, way before COVID-19. But it seems like, you know, in this, on the one hand, the pandemic sort of accelerated anyone who's doing anything related to telehealth. But it also, I think, has sort of helped to reduce some of the stigma around mental health. I think you hear people talking a lot more openly about it lately. So we're in this moment where it seems like this is the time for, you know, services that help to kind of make mental health scalable using digital technology to really thrive. And so I wanted to get your opinion on sort of what's out there, what works, what doesn't work, you know, whether we're on the right track as an industry approaching those, you know, the problem that needs to be solved.
So when it comes to mental health, my belief is that everyone is looking the wrong way. Right. So understandably, there has been a huge emphasis in recent times on, as you say, telepsychiatry, like telebehavioral health. And, you know, that is a very important starting point and kind of almost the obvious first step in the, you know, you take the existing old school model, traditional way of delivering these therapies via humans, and you add a technology layer on top of it. Challenge is that that is incremental benefit, not exponential or transformational, you know, improvements that are necessary to tackle the huge amount of unmet need in the system. You know, so if you think about, you know, telehealth around mental health, you know, even on a good day, these are reaching a very small minority of the population, and we're already seeing that topping out, like huge network challenges. There just aren't enough therapists right now to satisfy the need. And so our view is that, you know, if you think about the iceberg of mental health, we're looking at just the tip of it that's poking out the water. There's a much greater body of need underneath that waterline. And what are those people doing right now? Well, if they're presenting to care at all, the chances are they're getting drugs. You know, over 80% of people with a mental health problem who present to care get medication. You know, and as we know, you know, those meds are really valuable and important in certain contexts, but the most commonly used medications do come with, you know, an array of different risk profiles and side effect profiles and, you know, lack efficacy in many contexts comparative to non-drug interventions. And then there's even more people who do nothing, right?
By and large, the drugs are meant to be used in conjunction with some kind of talk therapy or some other kind of, like, lifestyle treatment, right?
Well, I think, you know, I think that the it differs by medication, but what is absolutely true is that, you know, the vast majority of people only have the option of medication. That's the only option they have. And so for me, you know, to your point, in line with clinical, if we're going to deliver care in line with clinical guidelines, then we need to find a way to match the scalability of drugs with the efficacy of these behavioral medicine approaches. And that is, in essence, what I view as the, not just the opportunity, but the absolutely screaming need for us to deploy digital therapeutics at scale.
Yeah, that's the promise of digital therapeutics, and yet that's also the source of everyone's sort of trepidation about them, right? Is this idea of turning over our mental and our emotional health to an AI, to a machine, you know, to something where there isn't that direct supervision of a, you know, of a trained professional human. So how do we make that leap and have the confidence to say this, you know, this app or this, you know, treatment, digital treatment modality is going to be able to help people, and we don't need to micromanage every case because we can't.
I think it's a really good point, and I think that this is why clinical evidence of a rigor that you would expect of any therapeutic should be expected of digital therapeutics. And I think that, you know, it's why at Big Health, like, we focus on that from the start. You know, I think we're known within the industry as having, you know, the largest clinical evidence base of any digital therapeutic. We're up to now, you know, over 32 studies published, 13 randomized control trials on our actual solutions, you know, Sleepio and Daylight, would show really, you know, really strong remission rates, like over 70% remission rates. And crucially, I mean, this is a stat that still blows my mind, more participants have taken part in controlled studies of Sleepio than have ever taken part in studies of Ambien.
That's crazy.
So if we start to actually look at the numbers here, it's like, and across all of those studies, we know by virtue of looking at like adverse events rates, exactly the same criteria you would use for a medication, we're radically safer than the best, the most commonly used medications. And so to answer your question, how do we make sure that we're confident in these interventions? We apply exactly the same rigor that we would for a medication or for any other kind of intervention. And I'm pleased to say that at least as relates to like our therapeutics, you know, over many years of clinical research now, we have demonstrated that they're really effective, really safe, low risk, I should say. And as a result, that's why we are cited in leading clinical guidelines. Like the American College of Physicians' most recent guideline on the management of insomnia disorder for adults cites our research and our research alone in support of their recommendation for inclusion of, you know, digital interventions as a first line intervention. You know, so those clinical guidelines, that's science and the clinical community continuing to do what it does best, using the same standards, but we're starting to see by virtue of that data, the you know, compare us to drugs is what I'd say. And like, I think that it's clear that we are for many people, not all people, but for many people, a really, you know, justifiable alternative.
So that obviously could be a threat to the pharma companies. You know, if you make Ambien, that maybe not is not good news for you. So what's been your experience there? Has there been resistance from that industry, or do they seem to recognize that this is the way things are going and, you know, they try to get on board the train?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, again, just to ask a really great question and to emphasize, you know, I think pharmacotherapy plays an incredibly important role. Like, I think any reasonable person would accept that, like, these drugs play a really, really important critical role. However, you know, I would assert that the data suggests that they are insufficient to tackle this need. So for some people, they're not appropriate. Others don't want to take the meds. You know, like, there's many people who would rather have a non-drug alternative. And so, and as you said, we have really good data that shows that they can both be used alongside each other. And we see very great results in that context. And so to be clear, like, I'm saying that we should take inspiration from pharma, that we should take inspiration from, you know, the fact that they are by volume far and away the most used form of healthcare worldwide. And I think that we should be thinking about how we can be synergistic to them in filling the gaps that pharma has to date not been able to fill and to pick up some of the slack. And so I think it's not intended, I don't think it's been interpreted, that the pharma companies that I haven't been in touch with fundamentally view themselves as being in the business of healthcare, of helping people get better. And so as long as one has the data to support it, I think it's more about thinking about an overall picture of a care program and like a care offering, as you know, in a sort of more integrated, holistic way, than thinking too reductively about you know, it being a zero-sum game between these solutions. It's a bit more of a nuanced perspective, but that it sincerely is, I think, the way that I would think about it.
Well, let's spin that out a little bit. What is the ideal future of mental health care look like to you with these three prongs of, you know, talk therapy, whether it's delivered in an office or over an app? And I think we recognize that in most cases, those are equally valid. And then digital therapeutics and then drugs. I mean, how would you, you know, ideally see all of those interplaying together for sort of maximal patient care for these common mental health conditions?
It's a brilliant question. And I think, you know, I don't think anyone has like a complete answer to that right now, but I do think that the principles of it are already established. So, you know, there are health systems such as the NHS or, you know, Kaiser here in the US, who follow like a step care model where there's an allocation of, you know, the most efficient, cost-effective and scalable, you know, therapies are offered to the broadest base of the pyramid, and the more expensive and intense, high acuity interventions are reserved for those that the lower acuity solutions haven't been effective for. And so I think, you know, what we're seeing is an increasing emergence of models where digital therapeutics, for example, such as ours, can act as a sort of, you know, the base of the pyramid, that we can tackle the big body of need that's out there very, very efficiently, and potentially even actively through integration pass up into talk therapy for those people who do need more help. And so as a result, you have this like synergistic relationship that those practitioners of talk therapy have digital therapeutics as a tool that they can like prescribe or refer people to. But vice versa is also true, that the digital therapeutic can act as an engagement front end, a first step in that care pathway, and a kind of like, but filter out very efficiently and tackle a lot of the clinical need before it gets to humans. And in pharmacotherapy, I think that the same rings true of primary care. You know, most of these medications are being distributed in primary care, and digital therapeutics can act as a precursor to primary care, but also a tool in primary care as well. You know, so I think it starts to create a picture of a much more integrated, I think digital can play a role here to sew together the member or patient experience, provide continuity, but also make sure that care is delivered very efficiently to those that are in need.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting that out of those three, digital therapeutics are potentially the most scalable and the easiest to distribute. I mean, more so even than drugs, right? Because they don't have to have a manufacturing apparatus behind them.
Completely. And again, every condition, every medication is different. But, you know, at least in the domains that we operate in, you know, the risk profile is very favorable. You know, the side effect profile is very favorable towards digital therapeutics. That's backed by the evidence and by the clinical guidelines. And so we're also afforded, you know, the opportunity to distribute much more broadly, that we can use digital first direct methods to reach out to and engage and offer help to those that are in need in a population, you know, even perhaps before they've engaged in any form of care, you know, and so really get upstream and ahead of that, you know, that huge body of need that currently we're seeing even telehealth being swamped by.
So you've been working with England's NHS for a while now, a number of years, right? But you've also recently announced some new partnerships with CVS, right? Or
we've also been, I mean, to be clear, I'm sat here in San Francisco, despite the accent. So we've actually, you know, the main bulk of our business to date has been here in the US. We've been here 5-6 years, you know, working through employer-sponsored health plans, but increasingly other types of health plan, to offer our digital therapeutics as fully reimbursed benefits, you know, in the same way that one would a medication. We did, as you say, we pioneered a relationship, a partnership with CVS Health now that's been live for 2-3 years. And that really was the first example of whereby our solutions, our therapeutics, can be administrated via the pharmacy benefit manager, via the PBM, using a lot of the same mechanisms and sort of plumbing that to date has been used for pharmacotherapy. And so that has been a real benefit for many plans, because it means it's very simple for them to administrate, just opt in to add our solutions to their formulary, and administrate it through the PBM in the same way, via claims, in the same way that they would a medication. So yeah, and then the NHS, again, is a whole different beast, but you're right, we've had a relationship with them for a very long time.
Do you have a sense of how many like total lives are sort of touched by your program? How many people either have or are currently using, you know, one of your therapeutics?
Oh my gosh. I mean, like we've, you know, our covered lives run into the many millions at this point. And, you know, I couldn't give you off the top of the head an exact figure, but very like highly, like very many, many people. you know, orders of scale, like greater. I mean, if you look at our clinical studies, for example, I mentioned that stat about more people in studies alone than even Ambien. You know, you can look at a study from a couple of years ago in JAMA, where the N is like north of 1,000, you know, participants. And that's just one study. You know, so we've had like 13,000 participants and that's just in a controlled environment, let alone out in the wild. So it speaks to the point that these are like, you know, incredibly scalable, probably, as you say, the most scalable type form of therapeutic that we currently have available to us.
So one thing we haven't talked about in relation to sort of comparing digital therapeutics to other treatment modalities is the stigma aspect, right? And obviously there's a stigma around mental health in general, around seeking care in terms of talk therapy. And in terms of drugs too. So, I mean, what has been your experience in terms of whether you get some of that also in the digital therapeutics realm, or if not, how does this modality sort of insulate you from having to deal with that?
Yes. So what excites me about the potential, one of the things that excites me about the potential of digital therapeutics, at least in these disease areas, these very prevalent chronic mental health issues, is the flexibility that a pure digital approach affords us in terms of how we reach people and how we engage them, like how we present ourselves, right? And what we present ourselves as, even if sort of under the hood, we have this, you know, clinical grade, you know, intervention that can, you know, as we know, like the data shows that we can support, you know, and help people who are, you know, remit at very, very high rates, like ahead of the medications. And so we've seen a lot of like traction from being able to take a more inclusive approach around our messaging. You know, so I view that sort of stigma is really just one exemplar of a general set of ways in which healthcare can be exclusionary. So stigma is, you know, is using certain language that turns people off, that doesn't feel relevant to them or feels in some way shameful. But I would also put into that category cultural relevance, right? Like, are there, you know, ways that are being, you know, the certain traditional forms of healthcare, the language people use that will isolate or exclude certain demographic groups or, you know, within the population. And so a lot of what we at Big Health have spent our time doing is working on, you know, not just one answer, but a sort of spectrum of ways of communicating and framing what we do in a way to maximize relevance and engagement across the population. So that could be as simple as, you know, we're at liberty to use very subclinical terminology, you know, around it being about poor sleep or, you know, just the sensation of worry or feeling overwhelmed, which might resonate and connect with groups in the population who are clinical. They have a clinical level problem, but would not see themselves as such. And so we've been able to, yeah, drive really significant engagement in populations and reach, you know, groups that otherwise we've not seen engage in traditional care.
Absolutely. So as we sort of come to the end of our time, I mean, what are, when you kind of go out there and talk about Big Health and about the problems that you're working on, you know, what are some of the things that you think most need to be said, either misconceptions, things people get wrong, or you know, conversations in the space that are still evolving?
I think probably the biggest misconception right now is that digital therapeutics are still just an idea. So, you know, we've been very focused. Those of us that have been close to us as an organization know that we've been very focused on keeping our heads down and just executing in terms of like, how do we actually solve not just the problem of like of developing products that are effective and safe, which is absolutely necessary as a first step, not just even collecting clinical evidence, which we have been able to do now at a really significant scale, but also how to deliver reimbursement coverage and distribution at really meaningful scale. And so, like I say, we've now been doing this 5-6 years, and you know, through partnerships with the CVS, through partnerships with the NHS, we've now, this is not theory, this is now live across many millions of people, and we're delivering care, you know, on a like at a really significant scale, which is growing year on year. So I think, if anything, I think that's kind of the kind of key point, which is it's kind of already here. Digital therapeutics, it just hasn't yet, I don't think it's yet necessarily been surfaced as such in the public domain.
Right. But, you know, obviously it's known within the industry, but that's, I mean, even within the industry, I think there's still the sense that it's new, that it's experimental. And, you know, for you guys, at least, that really isn't the case at this point.
Exactly right. And, you know, I do think, you know, what excites me about the digital therapeutic space is it's, you know, as broad a tent and as big a tent as all of healthcare. So there's no one answer. Like every disease area, like every context may need a different solution in terms of product, in terms of delivery mechanism. So, you know, there's no, it's as heterogeneous as healthcare itself. So all I can speak to is in the context of the areas that we're tackling, And in those areas, like as exactly as you say, like it's something which I'm proudest of, like the actual material traction that we've been able to deliver over the last couple of years.
On that note, what's next for you guys? Do you plan to expand into additional areas and conditions, or is it more just about, you know, doing what you do better, bigger, getting to more people?
Kind of all of the above. So I think that we have a lot of comfort around, like many years now, data and optimization of some of the approaches that we've been able to take in terms of both the coverage and reimbursement side, as well as the distribution to members, to individuals. And so point one, continuing that trajectory of just scaling what we're already doing, but absolutely like building out that pipeline of additional therapeutics to be able to drop onto those rails is a big next focus for us. But as you say, like our focus today is being like, let's get those rails set and get some of these principles evaluated with partners, like at the NHS and CVS, like with humility, going like, how do we work together to demonstrate that this is effective at scale? But now we're past that point. It really is about pushing on all of those different frontiers at the same time.
Great. Is there anything we haven't talked about yet that you think is an important piece of this discussion, Peter?
I don't think so. I'm only just impressed by your array of musical instruments.
Thank you. Yeah.
And slightly intimidated.
I don't play all of them, but I'm working on it.
I feel I should. It makes me want to invest more in, you know, in a skill.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Peter. This was great, and I can't believe we haven't had this conversation before or connected before, but I think the work you guys are doing is incredible. It's very impressive, and so I'll be looking forward to hearing more.
Likewise. A real pleasure, Jonah. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Before we go, I just want to say thank you one more time to our sponsor, Carisoft. Working with its vendor and reseller partners, Carisoft provides access to cybersecurity and other technologies focused on improving the quality of the health delivery system for patients and physicians. And you can learn more at carisoft.com/cybersecurity. In our show notes, as always, we'll include some links to covers that we've done in our three information brands that relate to the conversation at hand. So things about mental health and specifically the coverage we've done on big health over the years. So you can check that out in the show notes. Peter, if you want to send us any of those studies that you mentioned, in case people want to dig into those in depth, we can include those in the notes too. And until next time, keep on innovating and keep being healthcare change makers.